Now, please take up the white booklet that you'll find in front of you. This is a copy of John's Gospel from the Bible, one of the eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life and teaching. And our next reading comes from the start of John's account. And if you've not recently read all the way through, and perhaps never, we'd love you to take this away and to read it over the Christmas period. So do please take this away at the end with you and read on over the Christmas break. So our reading is on page 3 of the white booklets, and Jen is going to come and read that for us.
So we're reading from page 3, at the top of the page. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness, to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me.' And from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at the Father's side. He has made him known."
Let me join with Ollie in wishing you a very happy Christmas. I'm very pleased you've been able to join us in our first Christmas as a church together. My name's Jamie and I'm the pastor of the church here. And this week I was, it's that time of year, isn't it, when people are gathering together their list of top tens. And this week I came across a list of the top 10 best letters to the editor from various newspapers. And my favourite was this one. You might have come across it before. It's written by a man called David Lavelle from North Yorkshire. He wrote, "Sir, I was assisting my 16-year-old daughter with her homework when she received a text from Mum which read, 'What do you want from life?' This was an unexpected and profound question for an exam-sitting teenager. We debated various answers: wealth, fulfillment, love, all three. But he goes on then to write about the abrupt end that came to their conversation when Mum sent a follow-up text apologising for the fact that the predictive text function on her phone had inserted the word life where she had originally intended to write Lidl. What do you want from Lidl? It's a very different question. What do you want from life? Or more specifically, what do you think life is? In the deepest sense of the word, what do you think life is?" You see, I think that's the burden of this book, to answer that question. What do you think life is? This book, John's Gospel. Do take it up if you've put it down. And turn back to chapter 1, where we're going to be looking for a few moments at this incredible piece of poetry written hundreds, thousands of years ago. What do you think life is? And the answer that I think John gives as you read through his gospel, and that we're going to see in the few verses we're going to look at, is this. Life is being part of a family. Life is being part of a family. Now, I know at this time of year, when I say that word family, it can have quite a polarizing effect. For some, it sends a tingle of joy down your spine as you think about the prospects of the days that are to come with the people you love most. For others, perhaps a shudder of doom at the prospect of being in the same house for days on end with the people who wind you up more than anyone else. But the reality of family that John is talking about is not actually the biological nuclear family that we all belong to. No, John is going to talk about something much deeper even than that. See, he starts, at least for our purposes, in verse 9 with this amazing declaration. John chapter 1, verse 9. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. Like I say, it's poetry, so John exploits different metaphors to speak of Jesus. And here in verse 9, the metaphor is that of light. Light coming into the world. Every once in a while in human history, an individual walks onto the stage, as it were, and transcends normal human behaviors. Sometimes it's in realms less significant, like the realm of sport, or of music, or of literature. Sometimes they are individuals with a bigger impact, existing in the realm of leadership or of politics, demonstrating deep personal sacrifice for the sake of others. Mother Teresa of Calcutta, demonstrating integrity and principle of the highest order, Nelson Mandela, demonstrating inspirational human leadership, no doubt Barack Obama. You remember those moments 8 years ago when he was receiving the presidency of the United States of America, that cold, frosty evening in January, as he stood there in front of a global audience, making global promises of a wonderful future. And when these people come along, they inevitably and understandably stir within us a sense of excitement, a sense perhaps of expectation, perhaps even of optimism as to what the future might be under their kind of leadership. It's like watching a shooting star for a moment, isn't it, as they light up the sky. And like all shooting stars, they have an illuminating effect on us as we look at them, as we gaze upon them, as sometimes we follow their lead. But at the same time, like all shooting stars, in the end they fade out, inevitably. Sometimes because I guess they shine a little less brightly than we thought they might, flaws perhaps in their personality. Other times because, well, as with everyone, their life comes to an end and their influence inevitably therefore wanes. John is saying here in John chapter 1 that Jesus came into the world and lit it up. Not fleetingly like a shooting star, but permanently, as though the sun rose and forever. Less shooting star, more sunrise. Because you see, Jesus embodied all of those qualities that we've just talked about. If you read through the John's gospel, that's what you'll see, page after page, chapter after chapter. Incredible moral excellence, like no one else who's ever walked the earth. Inspirational leadership, no doubt. And at the end of the story, at the end of his life, deep personal sacrifice for the sake of others. And like I say, if you read through John's gospel, you'll see it all. But there is one thing, in a sense, that sets Jesus apart, that makes him completely unlike those other figures I've just mentioned. That is his divinity. That he was God. You see, that's the staggering and you might say controversial claim that John makes as you read through chapter 1. We read it a moment ago. Do look down at verse 1. Amazing words. In the beginning, he says, was the Word. Again, poetry, so he's using a different metaphor to speak of Jesus. And the metaphor is that of a word spoken. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. John is saying of Jesus, indeed Jesus said of himself as the story goes on, that he is the uncreated God who created all things. Not just, as we celebrate at this time of year, a baby who came into the world. Not just a man who grew up and lived an incredible life. Not just even someone who died and then rose from the dead. John says here, the creator of all things. And more than that, he is the origin of life, we're told. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. So that Jesus is not just a moralist, if you like. Someone who came into the world and taught us how to live. A sort of heavenly headmaster, if you like, who came down from the heavens to gently tut-tut and wag his finger and tell us to pull our moral socks up. No, that's not Jesus. Not even an incredible philosopher who had insight beyond himself, though that is, of course, true. Now, Jesus is described in verse 9 as the one who enlightens everyone. And he enlightens everyone because he is the one who can show the way to light up the way to heaven. He is, as John describes him elsewhere, the redeemer, the revealer, and the rescuer. You see, this image that we're just meditating on here in verse 9 is an image of a shaft of light coming down. That's what we celebrate at Christmas, light that comes into the world. And you can imagine, can't you, a deep, dark cave, utter blackness, and then just a small crack in the facade of the cave, so that when the sun rises, the light streams down and through, just one stream, one light shining through. Jesus is that light. And as the light shines down, we're told again and again, he illuminates the world that he shines down on. Ask anyone who's a follower of Jesus, and they will tell you about the illuminating effects that Jesus has on their life. But this light that John's talking about doesn't just shine down. It, as it were, shines back up as well. Jesus illuminates heaven for us. He shows us the way back to God. And he's able to do that, of course, because he is God. That's a staggering claim. And I hope you'll take this gospel away with you this Christmas and read it through again and just see the story unfold. Better even, perhaps, why not talk to a friend and say, let's meet up and read this in the new year, perhaps over a coffee. Do make them pay for it. And then week by week, just read through it. As you read through it with them, maybe they'll give you answers to some of the stimulating questions that this gospel raises. Because again and again, Jesus says amazing things like, if you want to see God, look at me. If you want to know God, come to know me. They're claims unlike any other human being has ever made and substantiated. And as Jesus makes them, he fulfills this longing that we all have for a leader to come and take us to a better future. Which is why verse 10 comes as such a surprise. He says, verse 10, he was in the world, again speaking of Jesus, he was in the world and the world was made through him. Yet the world did not know him. He came to his own and his own people did not receive him. If John's claim is true, and I'm aware it's a big claim, staggeringly big claim, but if that claim is true, then you wonder why was it that people didn't receive him with open arms? We're told, verse 11, they did not receive him. Verse 10, the world did not know him. Almost as though they didn't want him when he came into the world. Why is that? How can that be? I guess there could be a number of different reasons. Ignorance, perhaps. So often people want nothing to do with Jesus because they misunderstand what he's all about. I read this quote from Hillary Clinton recently. Don't worry, we're not going to get into politics. She was speaking about the Christian faith. At the Al Smith dinner, just before the election, she said this. She said, I'm not a Catholic, I'm a Methodist. But one of the things we share is a belief that in order to achieve salvation, we need both faith and good works. You hear what she's saying? She's saying the heart of Christianity is a little bit of believing and a little bit of, well, doing better. Good works, pulling your moral socks up. But that's not why Jesus came into the world. He didn't ask people to pull their moral socks up. All he said was, believe in me, follow me. Sometimes it's ignorance. Sometimes I wonder if it isn't pride that causes people to push Jesus away. Donald Trump said something this year. Again, don't worry, we're not going to get into his politics. But it was a misunderstanding again of the Christian faith that caught my attention. He was being asked by a journalist about a previous statement that he'd made that he didn't need forgiveness from God. And with a modicum more humility, he said these words. He said, "I will be asking for forgiveness, but hopefully I won't have to be asking for much forgiveness." Oh, Donald. It's a statement of deep pride, isn't it? That says, I haven't got much to be forgiven for. Maybe a minor peccadillo here, a minor offense here, just a few things around the edges. But secretly, I suspect when I get to heaven and look at God, I'll be able to look him in the eye and say, I'm good enough to come in. Deep pride that keeps us pushing Jesus away. I was reminded recently of the story of a little boy who was writing his Christmas wish list, not to Santa in this case, but to Jesus himself, I guess bypassing the middleman and going straight to the top. And he sat down to write his letter and penned these words, "Dear Jesus, I have been a very good boy all year." But then his conscience got the better of him. He thought, I can't write that with integrity. Took the bit of paper, scrumpled it up, threw it in the bin, began to write again. "Dear Jesus, I have been a very good boy this month." Thought to himself, I can't even say that. Scrumpled the paper up, put it in the bin, started again. "Dear Jesus, I have been a very good boy this week." But even then thought, I can't even write that. Scrumpled the paper up, put it in the bin. I was a bit despondent at this point. Then, just in the corner of his eye, noticed the nativity scene in the corner of the room and slid over there gently and discreetly and put his hand into the scene and grabbed the figure of Mary and just shoved it in his pocket. Went back over to the paper and wrote, "Dear Jesus, I have your mother. If you want to see her again, you will meet my list of demands." In so many ways, I'm like that little boy, but particularly in that I can't say I have been good this year. Not even this month, not even this week, even today in so many ways. I haven't, as it were, received Jesus and followed him as the king that Ollie helped us see that he is. And none of us can say that really. And so often I think it's what keeps us from receiving him and the good gift that he's come to offer. Which is tragic really, because of what it is he's come to offer. Verse 12. "To all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the rights to become children of God." People will tell you that Christmas is actually really all about giving. Give, give, give. Don't be a consumerist. Be a giver, not a getter. You might have thought that's what I'd stand up and encourage you to do this Christmas. Be someone who gives a bit more, makes a difference in your world. But you know what? Christmas is actually all about receiving. Verse 12, that's what he says, isn't it? "To all who did receive him, who believed in his name." It is about receiving Jesus as he comes into the world for our sake. And as we receive Jesus, so in turn, we get to receive God. That's the staggering claim of Jesus' life and of these verses. If you receive Jesus, you receive God. Don't know what your favorite Christmas ad is this year. It's always fun, isn't it, thinking which is the best one. The John Lewis Buster the Boxer ads are pretty high up there. I just found this week the Aldi and the Kevin the Carrot adverts. They're quite fun if you haven't come across them. But I think the winner is probably the Sainsbury's advert, isn't it, with James Corden's skinny, self-cloning alter ego desperately running around trying to find time for his family. And I love the advert because there's something about it that just resonates at a deep level. This guy who wants nothing more than to be with his kids running around, a father with his family, who declares in the words of the song, "The greatest gift that I can give is me." And I wonder if it doesn't resonate because it's true of the God who made us. He's a father who wants to be reunited with his children. He's a father who says to us, "The greatest gift that I can give is me." That is God, and he wants to bring us back into his family. To all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the rights to become children of God. Amazing, really, isn't it, that God would do that for us. Despite the fact that by nature we turn our back on him, he comes into the world to bring us back into his family. Children of God, a wonderful picture of security, of relationship, by implication, I guess, of forgiveness and of reconciliation for the things that we've done. A wonderful promise of a future inheritance as part of this family. That's life, you see, as far as Jesus is concerned, coming into a family, the family of God. And whether we know it or not, that is the gift we need most of all this Christmas. They estimate that last year, the best part of £300 million was left unclaimed on Christmas gift cards, just unspent. You think to yourself, what a tragic waste, all that money just sitting there, all those gifts, as it were, unreceived. Well, here from these words in John's Gospel is the promise of a wonderful gift that simply has to be received, not earned, just received, by believing in Jesus Christ, the light who comes into the world to bring us into the family of God. The only question that remains, therefore, is will you receive the gift or will you waste the gift? Allow me to pray. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for Jesus coming into the world. We thank you for the great opportunity that it gives us to celebrate being with each other, being family together. And we ask, Lord, that this Christmas you would help open our eyes to see the wonderful, even bigger family that you're offering to us, your family. And we ask that you'd help us to receive Jesus and to join with you. And we ask it in his name. Amen.